Kind of continuation of the talk of Mingo and Spicer, and I will try to show you how some enumeration problems of graphs, the graphs which are encountered in planar maps, are related with random matrices. For a map is just a connected, maybe. A map is a connected graph, which is embedded into a surface. So embedded into a surface. And a surface and the genus of a map is the minimal genus of the surface in which it can be embedded in such a way that edges do not cross. Once you have done this embedding, so genus minimal genus of such a surface. Okay, so to be on the local mode, I will draw my vertices as circles. So you are given some vertices with dots on the boundary, and so a possible map embedded into the sphere will be this one. Okay, and I will also consider colored maps, in which case the edges will be colored. So this means that this time the dots will be colored and there will be colored edges so, between these dots. Okay. So so the relation that was made already during the conference is that so if you take, let's say, mu n to be the layer of the GUE, or Gaussian matrix, so trace of x square, so it's Hermitian Gaussian matrix. Then, if you look at the trace of xk, normalize it by m, and you take the expectation under this law, so this converges towards the Catalan number, and the Catalan number, so what they count is the number of maps, of planar maps, that I can draw by taking so one of these circles, and so putting k dots, and doing, so I'm counting for the number of planar maps that I can draw with this vertex. Okay, and what was also shown by so as n goes to infinity. What was also discussed by Mingo was that so if you take covariances, minus so let me call this denote this by expectation. So this is the expectation under this law. So minus the expectation of the trace. So this converges towards also the number of maps, but this time you have two vertices. So you have one with m dots and one with k dots. So m dots, k dots. And you look at the number of planar maps. Okay, here there was none that you can draw with these vertices. So here you have to be a bit precise on how you count this map. So you have to think that, well, here for instance, that each of these vertices comes with a root and an orientation. So the unique way when I'm giving these vertices to embed them in the surface, And furthermore, because I'm giving this fruit on this orientation, this is as these, all the dots were labeled. Okay, so for the basic, what you are given is what I call a star. So a star, now I can define it in a colored way. So a star of type 2, which is a monomial, which are given several matrices, several non-commuting variables. So this will be, so if I consider this specific monomial, then I associate this bijectively with one vertex with a favorite dot, which will have the color I1. Okay, so let's say, so I have n colors. So I will have color I1. Then I have the orientation I2, I3, and so on until the color IK. Okay, so this is the object. And you have the generalization of this kind of result to several matrices by considering the trace of independent matrices. Maybe I should give an example here. So I don't know. So if I have x1 square, x2, x1, so this will be represented by this color dot, where I will have, let's say, two first dots of color red for 1, and 1 for the x2, and then 1 for the x3. And I will remember that there is a root here. Okay, so the result of that Voiculescu proved in the 80s was that also if you look at the trace of xi1 to xik, so this will converge as n goes to infinity towards the number of maps that you can draw on these colored dots. So here you have again this one by gluing pairwise in a planar way the dots of the same color. Okay, so here, for instance, there is no such map, but okay, let's for instance something like this. Okay, so this kind of result of reminiscence a previous result by Brezin, so in physics by Brezin, Itzigsohn, Parbusi, and Joubert, so who considered instead of looking at moment, they consider a Laplace transform, which you can think as a generating function as this kind of object. So Brezin, Parbusi, Itzigsohn, and Joubert. So in 78, so they prove that if you look at, let me put the trace, I think they considered X3, so you consider this under the Gaussian law, and you take the log and you renormalize by n square, so what they prove was this can be seen as a generating function of this number of maps. And then this is the sum over the genera, 1 over n to the 2g, times the sum over k of so beta to the k divided by k factorial, times the number of maps with genus G and K stars of type X3. Okay. So here may be something I didn't precise in the counting, which is that all stars are labeled. Okay. So I mean, in this way you don't ask any question about symmetries of the build the map that you construct. Okay, so you may notice that this integral is in general infinite because you have a cubic potential. For this, equality is formal. So in the sense that this result means that if you look at derivatives on both sides, they will coincide. Okay, and this is related with this kind of result because, so if you take the first derivative in beta, you will see that when you imagine you can take the limit as n goes to infinity, then you will find exactly the first result, the Wigner law, in the sense that the large n limit, you have mostly the genus zero contribution. Okay. And if you take the second derivative, you will find the covariance. And so again, if you would imagine you can take the large n limit, which is this result does not allow you to do a priori, since it's only a formal equality, you would also find this type of combinatorics I just wrote over there. Okay, and so this also generalizes to several matrices. So for several matrices, you look. So you give yourself monomials. And give me one x1, so independent matrices. And this this can be seen formally as the sum of 1 over n to the 2g, the sum over k1. Kn, so if I have n monomials, and here I have some generating function. And here I have a number of maps with genus j, and ki stars of type qi, so for I in between 1 and n. Okay, so as I said, this result is actually completely rigorous in the sense that when you do this formal computation, what this boils down to do is exactly at the end a Gaussian computation. Okay, and then you can just use the calculus to find this expansion holds. So what we could prove, so but as I said, a priori this result does not allow you to take any large n limit. So what we proved is that in fact this can be turned into a large n limit. So the theorem is that so if the potential here, so the potential V is good. Then, for all, if you want to stop, so if you want to look at this expansion up to n, to the correction 1 over n to the 2j, with some capital J fix, so for all j, there exists some positive epsilon, so that if the beta I of smaller than epsilon j, then this expansion, so let me denote this fn of v, so then fn of v is the sum from g equal to 0 to capital G, 1 over n to g of this this number, so plus something small. Okay, so this is just going from the formal expansion to a large n limit expansion. So this was proved So for one matrix by Ercolani and McLaughlin by using Riemann-Hilbert techniques, and then in some work with Edouard Morel-Segala and some work he did on his own, we could obtain this result for several matrices. So, so one of the applications of this result is, as I said, that you can take the large n limit. And since we are considering in this conference planar maps, let's take just the limit. So restrict ourselves to genus 0. And so one of the applications of this result is that the limit of this Gaussian integral. I didn't say what good was when I was talking about my polynomial. So good means at least that this integral is well defined. So maybe I should put a minus. So if I put a minus, examples of good potential will be convex potential, convex in the matrices. Ah, it has to be so good. Let me say what is good. So good is self-adjoint, and ever convex. Oh, you have to add a cutoff. So it is some condition which makes the integral finite. Because otherwise, of course, you could have trouble to prove this kind of expansion, which is finite on the right-hand side. So one of the applications is, as I said, to obtain the limit as n goes to infinity. So what we proved is that this is the limit of this generating function. Like I factorial of this number of maps, so planar maps, with ki stars of type qi. So one of the interesting application also of this this type of result is that not only we can prove the convergence of the free energy, but also, for instance, of first derivatives of this free energy. So namely, if we look at the Gibbs measure, so the Gibbs measure is just, so this time you have a potential. This is exponential minus n, the sum trace of qi. Okay, so under, so you can generalize the theorem of Voikulescu, where beta, where you are considering the trace of polynomials under the law of independent matrices, by considering what happens when you have this kind of small interaction, okay? And then what you find is that so 1 over n the trace of, let's say, q of x1 xn under this law. So this converges towards, again, a generating function, where, which is exactly the same as A, except that you have one additional star, which is exactly the star coming from Q. Okay, so this is the sum of minus beta I to the ki factorial times the number of maps. So planar maps with ki stars of type qi plus 1 of type q. Okay, so this is the kind of result we obtain, and what is in I think at the end, the real interest of this kind of representation, at least on a combinatorial point of view, is that this property tells you some positivity on this kind of generating function, namely that this is some limit on this, because this is a limit of a trace, the limit will have to be also a trace, a threshold state. So this is somehow the way I think that this kind of models are really used to solve, for instance, the combinatorial problem. Okay? So what I want to talk about today is not this maps, but as you could see, what you get here at the end of the day is some generating functions of some maps, and these maps are some maps that are encountered in planar algebra. So now what I would like to do is to consider some other matrix model and show you some other maps which comes into the game. So namely what I want to talk about is two pieces of work. So first I would like to talk about some matrix models, matrix integrals, for the R measure on for the unitary group. And so this is joint work with Edouard Morel-Segalin and Benoît Collins. And if I have time, I will speak about the low temperature expansion. Which is some work in progress. So with also Morel-Segalin and Amir Dambo. So what I mean by this is that, so in the first work I will consider the same kind of questions, but instead of integrating under the Gaussian law, I will integrate over the R measure. And I always think of this kind of thing as small perturbation. I mean, always the beta I's are small, so everything is a small perturbation of the Gaussian laws. So you can wonder, I mean, it's quite a natural question, at least on a statistical mechanics point of view, if instead you have a big potential, that you are, so the beta I's are very big. Okay, so for the first model, so maybe I could recycle some of this. So this is the point. Let's see. Okay, so now I want to take x1, xn, which are distributed. And so we'll take polynomials in the, so let me call them U1. Okay, I'm going to erase everything at the end. So you want to take polynomial in the UI on their adjoint. And also you can have some matrices around. Okay. Yeah, I think it's not a very good idea. So AI, yeah, it's very, very bad idea. So AI, let me remind this. I will have a set of Hermitian matrices. Let's say A1, AM. Hermitian matrices. I will assume that I know that the trace of any polynomial in these matrices converge. Okay? Of A1, AM, so this converges towards some tau of P. for all polynomials, and as well, I will assume that these are bounded. So for in any dimension, for the spectral radius of the matrices is uniformly bounded. Okay, now I look at the free energy where I take monomials in this UI, UI star on this AI, and the result is going to be the same, except that I will take the limit. It was a very bad idea. And then I take planar maps. So planar maps to precise. Okay. So the result will be that also we have some generating function of planar maps, but of course these planar maps will be different. Okay. And this limit will be true if the beta I are small enough, as well as so I will need the polynomial to be self-adjoint. Okay. So this hypothesis of self-adjoint is needed so that we have here something real, and not so it's technical assumption. But okay. So now I want to precise which kind of drawing you see when you're dealing now with these unitary integrals. So first I should come back to, maybe I will start it new. So okay, so first I have to define what are going to be my vertices. Okay, so my vertices, they should be related with the Qs. Okay. So let me take some monomial. UI1. So maybe I can take some matrices. B1, UI2, εn2. So a new IN epsilon N and BN. Okay? So the B's are some matrices in the algebra generated by the A's. And so the vertex, the star that I will associate to this structure. So now you still have the circle. So let me call, so for some reason we decided to take a priori the root to be the last U. Not the last U star, but the last U. Okay, so let me take okay. So let me draw. What I will do is that I will draw dots each time I meet a U, and so I have m colors a priori. So I have colored dots, and then I put diamonds in between with the weights B1, and here I have dots and diamonds, etc. Okay. So these are supposed to be colored dots. Okay. So for instance, if I have U1 B1 U2 B2 U1 star, I will have these two of the same color. Okay. Now I have to make the difference between U and U star. So to do that, I do some arrows. And so I draw an up arrow when I meet a U, and an inward arrow when I meet a U star. Okay? So let's, here it's a U. Okay, and so this is nice. I have to add something, which is at each U, I will add some small circle on the, too bad, on the right. Well, yeah. Let's add it on. Okay? So this is the vertex, the typical vertex of my map. And now, what will be a map? So when I will be given, so of course again there is a bijection between this fuse and this this drawing. And what is a map? So I have my let's say two circles. So I have some, let's say something like this. Or maybe I don't want, well, yeah, let's say, up. Ah, I put it on the wrong side, okay. Okay, something like this. So for a map, so here you imagine you have the diamonds with the weight. And so to build the map, so you need to pair the arrows in such a way that you have an oriented edge. Okay, so for instance like this. And so this would be a map, but if you would have such a map, so this would be exactly what you would count if you would have just Gaussian and non-symmetric matrices. So to consider unitary matrices, you have some extra edge to draw, which is that you can have also edges between the circles. So you can have them, and you can have several of them in a circle, and you can also have none. Okay, so you have you are given this freedom. Okay, so the weight. So what I want to so the weight of a map. So this will be, so you look at all the faces that you have drawn, and what you do is that you look at all the diamonds around this kind of necklace, and this gives you a monomials in the A's, which are the only thing you didn't integrate, and you take the trace. Okay, so the weight will be the product of the trace of the monome of the faces, so product of all faces, and then you have a file. So this also the dotted edge is the boundary of a face. Okay, and what you have to add is -1 to the number of this dotted edge. Okay, and so for this, for the so what you would like to write is that this is going to be the sum of the maps M built on so Ki staff of type Q times this weight. Okay, so this is nearly true, except that not all the maps happen to be admissible. So you need an extra restriction, which is the following: that somehow all the dotted edges should come in the same order. So this is not a very good example. So maybe I should, let's see. Maybe, let's see. Okay, so maybe I want to do that. Let's see. Okay, so what I mean by this is that so I have the root of my map, which is given by the root of the first star, and when I look at the dotted edges that I drawed from it, I have to make sure. So, for instance, here, so this is one. I have to make sure that the rightmost dotted edge will be related to a rightmost dotted edge of another U. So this is, and then I continue like this. I want this to be the first dotted edge, okay? So an example which would not work would be something like this. I have fixed my root, and this map is not admissible here, because the dotted edge is glued with the second dotted edge of this guy. So this shows that, in fact, so the maps that we are considering, they depend on the route that you assigned at the beginning, but what happens is that the sum of the weights do not depend on these choices. Okay? So this is the result. So once you restrict yourself to this admissible map, you get this sum. So one an application, for instance, maybe you will. So an application is to apply this to the Itzigson Zuber Alexandra Zuber Alexandra integral. Okay, so the limit, so the Itzigson Zuber Alexandra integral is given as the expectation under the measure of this quantity, so it's a quadratic in U. And so our results say that if we take the log of this integral, 1 over n2, then this converges as n goes to infinity. And the limit is given as the sum of the beta n divided by n factorial times the number of maps, so planar maps, drawn or built with n stars. So of this type, so the stars of this type are just given by this symbol, where here you put B and here you put A. Okay? So the convergence of this integral was proved by Ofer Vaituni and myself for any betas, but the limit was given, so it was a large deviation type estimate, and the limit was given in some variational problem. So it was kind of difficult to really work with that. Then there was some work of Benoit Collins, who proved the formal expansion. And what we proved was that actually, so there is convergence, and the formal limit agrees with the real limit. So we can turn this formal expansion into a real expansion. Okay, so here it's for beta small, and of course under the same assumption that so this is converging and this is converging. Okay. So also what is nice now with the combinatorial interpretation that we have is that we can look at these numbers. Well, it's not exactly a number because, of course, it depends on the traces of monomials in A. But, so it's mu A, mu B. So maybe I can say a few words. So for instance, we can compute the first element of this series. So you can assume that mu A and mu B are centered, since otherwise this is just a shift on the matrix. So now if I look at F1, so this means I have only one star I see, so I have this drawing. I have A and I have B. I think I can only do that, so this will have contribution 0 because I have the trace A, which is 0. If I look at the second term, I have again, I have only one choice. So far each time I want to add a dotted edge, I will introduce a trace of A, or a trace of B, which is zero. So here I have only this possibility. For the third exponent, it's the same. Each time I want to introduce some dotted edge, I will have not more. I will introduce a trace of A. So the interesting thing happens when you consider the trace of the fourth term. And here, really, it starts being very different from what you would have if you would have a Gaussian matrix. So with the fourth term, so you have four guys like this. So you can do that. Okay. Now you can. I always think of the circle on the left. So I will switch from right to left, but I hope it's okay with you. So you can add now one of these other edges like this, for instance. So this will make some factor like this, tau b square, as well as the symmetric. But you can also have drawings. You can also have drawings where the gluing of these parts are disconnected, provided that you glue by a dotted edge. I mean, you need to have always connected maps, so you have also this kind of possibilities. And you can also, here glue by another dotted edge, the two same circles, but you cannot do it more than twice. So anyway, you can draw lots of pictures like this to obtain the expansion. And so what one of the nice feedback from this is that, so you can see by the symmetry in choosing this this star, that this will be n minus 1 factorial times some integer, which is simply the number of maps that you have when you forget about labeling of the stars somehow, okay, because of the symmetry. And so this was a question which was raised by Zuber and Injustin, that notice that this expansion holds with some integer divided by n, and they asked what was this integer, and we even bet a bottle of champagne as much, so at least there is a solid motivation for this such a result. So this is this kind of what? Yeah. Well, that's true. Okay, so this was all I wanted to say on the unitary case. So now I can. So what I can say also is that, I mean, if you follow the idea of Toft in 74, the idea of Toft was that each time you have this kind of integral, if you have some invariance of the action of the unitary group, you should expect that integrals like this expand in terms of maps with genus, exactly the same kind of thing. So it's kind of a very natural result that you could find this kind of structure. Okay, so for the low temperature, the low temperature, we only consider this time the case of one matrix, because simply we have much less feeling about what is going on. So low temperature. So we consider, so this amounts to considering, so the trace of V of X, dx, which in this case you can write as an integral over the eigenvalue. Here it's a GUI. Yeah. Maybe we could also do, well, yeah. We started it like this on the... Okay, so you take the sum, the product of vegan values, and so what you would like, so we know that there exists a free energy, so we know in fact that, so if I consider this n of beta, then 1 over n squared the log of n beta, so this converges towards some f beta. So for any temperature, well, provided of course V, let's say beta is positive and V goes to infinity fast enough. And so the question we raised was whether this f beta was analytic in beta, and whether the coefficient of the expansion was some related to some nice numbers. And so the answer does not seem. What I will say is very preliminary, but so that several things can happen. It depends, of course, on V. So if V is convex, strictly convex, somehow, so minimal, well, no, actually it's locally convex, okay. So if V is minimum at a unique x star, then we can, so f beta is going to be given by 1 over 2 the log of beta minus, so let's say 0, minus beta minus 1 v0, plus some g of beta, and this g of beta is a nice analytic function. In fact, it is also a generating function for the same type of maps. And this is only, and I need also this minimizer to be a non-degenerate. Okay, and this is very easy, because if for instance VFX was x squared plus some other polynomial, you would realize that by doing a change of variable, to put y to be x divided by square root of beta, then you would come back to a situation of high temperature. I mean, somehow you would be exactly in the situation of a small perturbation of Gaussian. So, but there is there was some motivation for that still, because what you really need is to have a minimum which is non-degenerate. You don't need strict convexity. And for instance, in the case where V of x is the log of x squared, we can apply this result, and this kind of integral appeared in the Chern-Simon theory. So this was the motivation for that. So if you have several minimizer, the situation becomes much more complicated, and I'm not sure that there is a general answer to that. So what we could prove is the following. So several minimizer. So then, so we assume, so let's say x1, xn, finite number of them, and we also assume that they are non-degenerate. Then we know that, so if I look at the empirical measure, maybe I should say it by words, because, so if I look at the empirical measure of the eigenvalues of my matrix under this potential, this will converge. Or what we proved is that the limit is supported on a small neighborhood of the xi, a small neighborhood of pi of size square root of beta. But in general, we don't know if there is any nice expansion. So what we considered is a symmetric double well potential. So symmetric. And even, yeah. So for a symmetric double well potential, we can prove that the free energy is analytic. provided again that we have this assumption. And we could get some combinatorial interpretation in the case where really of the coefficient, in the case where really this is C square. I mean that there is no perturbation of the polynomial. So that really, in fact, you are in the same situation as two copies of x squared. Okay, so I'm very sorry, I went over my time. So just a word. So the strategy is it always follows from what we did with Edouard Morel-Segala, which is to consider the Schwinger-Dyson equation of the model. So this is related with what Delvey Kulescu talked about. So you have some kind of nice equation over the limiting measures. And then all the strategies are always to show that this equation has a unique solution, and that the generating function of the maps you are considering are satisfying the same equation. So this is always, so in the case of the Gaussian, this was easy because we knew a priori which maps we were constructing. In the case of the unitary, or in this case, it's really by kind of cooking recipe that when you are trying something and then if it works, you're happy, otherwise you throw some more edges and stuff on colors until it fits. So this is this is more or less the strategy. Okay. Thank you.